Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today is Wednesday, November 15th. I'm your host, Stephen Overly. UK Tech Secretary Michelle Donlan is in the US this week, the latest British official to make the sweep through Washington, D.C., Seattle, and San Francisco in recent months. You may recall we had Secretary Donlan on the podcast last month, ahead of the UK's big AI safety summit. Her position in the UK government was only created earlier this year, and yet she's been handed an ambitious mandate to make the UK a tech superpower by the end of the decade. On the show today, I caught up with Secretary Donlan between her meetings on Capitol Hill. She elaborated on plans for the US and UK to join forces against AI risks and offered some advice for US policymakers based on the UK's efforts to regulate big tech. Other than folks who also work at Politico, you're our first repeat guest. So you have the distinct honor of appearing twice before anyone else.
It's my claim to fame. I like it.
Secretary Donlan, welcome back to Politico Tech. Great to have you again. The last time that we spoke, we discussed the upcoming UK AI summit. That has now come and gone. You're in the US this week. Is your visit sort of a following up on that event?
It is in part. So hot off the wheels of the summit. Yeah, we are here in the United States, deepening that partnership and picking up on some of the conversations that took place during the summit to make sure that our institute and your institute, when it is created, can work together as sister organizations and that we can really share expertise and also information. But it's not the limit of what I'm discussing here in America. I'm also picking up on the Online Safety Act that we have produced in the United Kingdom, which is the most comprehensive piece of legislation in this area across the globe. And I know that your legislators are attempting something in a more targeted way around children. And I'm very much trying to help and showcase what we've done and to try and encourage other nations, including America, to follow suit. And then also got several meetings with lots of tech companies as we try and ensure that we have the correct environment and ingredients in the UK to continue to attract and grow the tech sector. And I've got some meetings on our important science agenda and including a visit to NASA.
Busy, busy slate of days then here in the US. And I want to follow up with you on each of those pieces, starting with the AI safety institutes you mentioned. You know, that was one of the announcements that came out of this summit, was that the UK and US would each set up these safety institutes that would work together on AI risks. What exactly will that work entail? You know, how will these two agencies, once they're up and running, be working together?
Yeah, so ours is, to all intents and purposes, already up and running. We established a Frontier AI Task Force a few months ago. I think I mentioned it on your show last time. And the Institute is basically the evolution of that task force. It's the next chapter, if you like. So we already have the expertise. We've got the funding. In fact, we've guaranteed the funding up to 2030. It's already begun testing the models. So it's fully functional. And we'll continue to add to the staff and expertise. And the way I see it working with your institute, once that's established, is very much them working in tandem together as sister organizations. That's certainly been the conversations that I've been having this week, them sharing information, them sharing expertise and transferring talent to one another so that we can together tackle this issue, so that we can together test models pre-deployment. But we've already begun the testing in the UK, and I think that we can help you as you set up your institute, having learned some lessons, setting up our own task force and onboarding people.
What's the number one lesson that you've learned that the US could maybe emulate as it's setting up its own safety institute?
I think obviously doing this at speed has been quite a challenge, but we've managed to do it remarkably quickly. The rate at which we got the talent and expertise on board was quite significant in comparison to how it normally would take place for a government onboarding people to something of this magnitude. But I think we've learned some lessons of how to streamline those processes, especially when people are coming from businesses where they have, it might be hard for them to be released from contracts or for them to navigate competing interests, et cetera. So certainly can share a lot of that, because the key aspect, the key ingredients that you really need for these institutes to be successful is indeed those expertise and that global talent.
And will these institutes focus primarily on frontier AI models? I know that was a big focus of the summit, and I wonder if that carries over into these agencies.
Yeah, it definitely does, because frontier AI is where we have the highest opportunities, but we also have the biggest and the gravest potential risks as well. So it is right that we focus on those via these institutes. And it's very timely, because the next set of models are coming out within the next 6 months. And that's why it's incredibly important that we now have this structure and process to be able to do this testing, which was agreed as a landmark agreement at the summit just a few weeks ago, allowing a pre-deployment testing, including of those new models.
In that vein, I'd like to get your thoughts on criticism that I've heard that, you know, focusing on frontier AI models takes attention away from current day, you know, present day risks with AI, things like bias, privacy, copyright. What do you make of that argument?
There are several answers to that argument. First of all, we've got to remember that this is only one part of the work when it comes to AI internationally. We already have international processes like GPA, like the Hiroshima process, the work of the OECD, the list goes on. There's several international processes that are looking at a number of those topics. And what we wanted to do with the summit was not duplicate or cut across, but complement. And this was the missing piece of the jigsaw. However, we also published in the UK a document just ahead of the summit, which was two documents, in fact, one from our top scientists and one from our national security teams, which detailed the scale of the risks associated with AI and the potential risks. And what it concluded, in essence, was that AI can amplify existing risks. And we at the summit discussed three categories of risk. One of them was around loss of control, which is much more that hypothetical long-term potential risk.
Right.
One of them's around misuse. That could happen now by bad actors, both individuals or state actors. And one of them was around societal harm. So to the point that you just made then about bias, disinformation, misinformation, impact on potentially on elections and democracy, these were risks that were discussed at the summit. In fact, I was in the societal harms risk session where the UK task force presented a demo showing the scale of the risk, really going into detail. And then civil society, ministers and companies contributed with their thoughts on this. And at several times, I referenced the threat to potentially to democracy and elections, which is something that I know is particularly pertinent to America and the UK as we march towards our elections.
Absolutely. I think that's top of mind for a lot of folks here in Washington. I'm sure you're hearing that. Mm-hmm. I know that you're soon headed to the West Coast, and I understand you'll be meeting with, you know, the big heavy hitters like Microsoft and Google and Meta and the like. You know, in those meetings, will you be pressing companies to provide greater access to their AI models before they're deployed? Because I know that, you know, governments have gotten commitments around safety testing. I think what's less clear to me is how much access governments will actually have to those models before they're made public.
So that was actually something that we achieved at the summit on day two. That was a landmark agreement that those companies signed up to agree not only to model access, which is something that we already had before the summit, but they agreed to model access pre-deployment, which is a massive monumental step, which will certainly, I think, give people the peace of mind that not only is the government taking these risks seriously, but we're actually acting on them. This isn't just about words and pleasantries. This is about tangible actions and us acting on a global stage with our partners, especially United States.
And do you have a sense yet of how you'll sort of check these companies' homework to make sure they make the grade? You know, I think that's one of the big questions. One of the big questions is to what extent, you know, the companies themselves, you know, should be trusted to do this testing and report it back to governments.
You're quite right. The system at the moment is for them to be marking their own homework. And there does need to be a collaborative counterweight. You know, the companies themselves have been saying that. And that's why, of course, they agreed to the agreement at Bletchley Park. That's half of the equation. Now, I would say, and we made this point at the summit too, that the companies need to be doing more as well as. And ahead of the summit, we got the companies, we managed to achieve for the first time ever, them publishing their own safety policies so that it was much more transparent. And we published our emerging processes document, the catalogue of the possible policies that they could have adopted so that we could really encourage a race to the top rather than a race to the bottom. But that has to be complemented by third-party testing. And I do believe that the government needs to have a role in that to be able to assure its citizens that this technology is being robustly tested and that we have put in place the necessary safeguards and mitigations. And that's certainly what the agreement that we brokered at Bletchley will enable us to do.
We'll be right back. To shift topics slightly, I did want to talk about online safety because I know that's a priority of your trip. And you were at the White House this week, specifically discussing online safety, I believe around sort of sexual exploitation and harassment. What came of that meeting?
Yeah, so that was a meeting by a group of civil society organizations, really delving into the topic and trying to hear more. I wanted to hear more about the work that was taking place in the United States, the patterns that you're seeing emerging in terms of the problem and the scale of the problem and the potential solutions. So it weaved in the threat that AI presents in terms of deepfakes. Also, the potential that AI may bring up some of the solutions, so things like potentially watermarking or fingerprinting, etc. But obviously, they are debated areas in terms of their robustness. But it was also an opportunity for me to share the work that we've done with our landmark Online Safety Act, how comprehensive that is and how it really shifts the dial. So, for example, we're in that Online Safety Act. We've made intimate image abuse illegal, the promotion of intimate image abuse. We've also added to the different categories of priority illegal harms, coercive control. We particularly tried to support those that are disproportionately impacted by abuse, in which it is undeniably women and girls. And we made a particular focus of the bill protecting children, especially from heinous predators that are trying to exploit them, and also protecting them from material that is certainly not suitable for individuals under the age of 18. So things like pornography, when we know that the average age a child sees pornography is now 13, which is quite staggering. And that's online, obviously, via social media.
You mentioned it, but here in the U.S., the sort of primary online safety legislation is this Online Safety Act aimed at children. Obviously, politics in Washington can be hard to predict, but it does seem to have an uphill battle in terms of getting passed. I wonder if you think there are ways the U.S. could be or should be more ambitious in how it legislates in this area, especially having passed your online safety bill.
Yeah. So as I said, I did a speech yesterday on this as well to Posse. It was difficult to pass the online safety bill in the UK. In fact, many people said it was going to be impossible, and it took a number of years, and it came up against some of the similar challenges that are now being replicated in America around things like freedom of speech, etc. And the way that we navigated through that was to rebalance the bill, to put at its heart the protection of children. And then when it comes to adults, to make it a bill that is focused on common sense. If things are illegal offline, then they should be illegal online. If a company promises to do something in their terms and conditions, they should actually do that thing. I don't think that's unreasonable. And then thirdly, empowering adults, giving them more choice over the content that they see. So my message to policymakers would be certainly engage with the legislation that we produced, which I do believe can be a blueprint, not just for America, but for countries around the world to really take that and run with it. And we know that it works. We know that we have worked at every stage with social media companies to ensure that everything that we're asking them to do is reasonable, is doable, and deliverable. And it's incumbent upon all of us to really make sure that our legislation keeps pace with the modern world in which we're living in. But it's important to make sure that legislators don't try to do everything possible within the online world, because obviously, you know, this is the first leap with legislation in this space. It will have to be added to in the future. We tried to make ours tech neutral so that it can be future-proofed. But I certainly think my other message would be, do not make perfect the enemy of the good. You can't do everything in one go.
With the meetings you have at tech companies, or is this an issue, the online safety issue, one that you'll be focused on, or their compliance with this? I know, for instance, when we spoke last time, there were some concerns with misinformation and graphic imagery, for instance, around the Israel-Gaza conflict. I wonder if sort of these sort of content moderation issues are something you plan to raise.
I'm sure they will come up in the conversation, given the scale of the conflict and the scale of the content that is still on some of these platforms. Despite, you know, I do know they have got processes in place and they are trying to remove that as quickly as possible. I think there is more that can be done. So that I'm sure that will come up. But that the focus of the actual conversations is much more around what more can we be doing in the UK to continue our mission to become a tech and science superpower by 2030. We believe very strongly that we have the right ingredients to achieve that, like the skills, like the regulatory environment, like the supportive taxation regime, etc. How can we double down on that? How can we build up those ingredients to entice more companies into the UK, or to entice them to grow even more and to be a really tech-friendly nation so that we can have the jobs of tomorrow and boost our economy? And given the recognition that we place on this sector and the importance that we believe it will have, not just in a year or two's time, but in the long-term future.
That does seem to be the needle that the UK is threading. Where, how do you grow your tech sector while also regulating it, keeping it safe? And it's interesting to see how the UK sort of approaches that balance.
Yeah, and I think on that, you know, we shouldn't always see regulation as anti-business. In fact, you know, most businesses I'm engaging with are saying what they really want is they want clarity when it comes to regulation. They want to know the roadmap in which they would be working to, so that they can make that long-term investment. And also, regulation can boost innovation if it's done correctly. And that's certainly what we've been proving in the AI sector to date.
Secretary, thank you so much for joining us on Politico Tech.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you again. I hope you have a lovely rest of the day.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior producer is Annie Reese. Our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. I'll see you back here tomorrow.